You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. It's Thanksgiving week, and that's a time that is deep in tradition for a lot of people and a lot of families. And one of the things that is great about women's college basketball is that there is tradition in some programs, and there are people that really enjoy being a part of that tradition. And that's what we're focusing on a little bit this week, as we're dealing with two programs that are looking to regain their past successes and are featuring their tradition in the way to current successes. And Coach Corey Close of UCLA joins me at this time. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. Coach, first let's talk about the current, and let's talk about that great win yesterday against Oklahoma.
Well, it was just, it's one of those things when you consider yourself a teacher, there's so many of those light bulb moments and things that you're trying to instill and habits you're trying to create and things that have maybe even been frustrating that why haven't I been able to get through quicker? And a lot of those came through to fruition yesterday against Oklahoma. And it was fun because it was just so much adversity where they had to dig down deep. People had to play really selfless roles. And it was just fun. It was a great opportunity for us. And also, I just really appreciate Oklahoma. We also, both teams, I thought, were playing for something bigger than themselves in the theme of this Thanksgiving week. We were raising money through Samaritan's Feet because we've adopted the kids at LA Dream Center as well as Rosemont Elementary School. And Oklahoma did one of the classiest things I've ever seen is they knew we were raising money to purchase 500 pairs of shoes. And right after the national anthem, their kids came out with stacks of shoes and handed them to our players and 100 pairs of shoes that they brought and donated to our cause. So it was really the wins and losses was one thing, but we all were playing for something bigger than ourselves.
That's phenomenal. And, it's unfortunate that didn't get enough publicity, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, this is the first that I've heard that. And, Coach Cole and her program, I've always been good about raising funds for various things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen her in those pink sneakers and it's great to see that they did that, and congratulations to you and your program for embracing the greater good and being able to help with the things that you can as well.
Well, what a privilege. I told our team right before the game, think about that. We get to compete for UCLA and the history that you referred to earlier, and also and we get to love basketball, and then we get to affect people's lives in the process. How much greater can it get? And so we just feel like, we wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, you mentioned the word adversity, and obviously adversity on the court clearly doesn't match what you're raising funds for and donating pairs mm-hmm. of shoes to people in need. But, your team has certainly faced some adversity already this year. People have talked up here in New England about, UConn going with the 7 players plus the 2
mm-hmm.
walk-ons. You didn't even have that many at the start of the season.
No, I didn't. That's why I've really had to hang our hat on defense and rebounding. Rebounding's gotten better. Defense still has a little bit of ways to go, but because we just haven't had any chemistry in practice to be able to scrimmage with the 5 people that are going to play together or anything of the sort to develop any offensive chemistry or rhythm. And so that's been really a difficult thing when you're trying to put that confidence on the offensive end of the floor. But it's been a great opportunity for us to teach. There's only one way we can win, y'all. We've got to lock down on defense. We got to win what we call passion plays, which are all the non-statistical things that we know really win possessions, deflections, assist screens, things like that. And then we just got to get more shots on the goals than our opponents. If we get the same amount of shots, we're probably not going to win. So even though the adversity has just been really, really difficult, it's forced us to build our identity on things that it needs to be built on anyway, but sometimes it's easy to go, oh, well, yeah, but then we can still score, but there's just no other option here. And, of my 8 players, I did play 8 yesterday. 3 of them have not played or practiced in over a year before they came back about a week and a half ago. And one of them is a walk-on who's had no experience. And the other ones, one is a JC transfer who's never played with us. And then the other 2 are playing roles they've never had to play. So it's been this really adventuresome thing. And it's really, we've really monitored, we only talk about what we do have. We don't talk about injuries or anything else within our locker room. We only talk about the strengths that we do have. And anything other than that becomes an energy vampire to steal from John Gordon and the energy bus. And so we've just really committed to that, that we're going to discipline our minds and our talk to talk about and focus on all the things that we do have and all the things that we do have to bring to the table, every possession that can help us win that possession.
You know, and Coach, one of the things that has impressed me about the way that you go about doing things is, you know, there's been some discussion among some analysts and stuff on Twitter lately about how some coaches don't go out and check out other teams and do other go to other practices and look at what other teams are doing. And that's something that you've always been, you know, embraced. And as a matter of fact, you've been up here to Connecticut, I believe, correct?
That's correct. Absolutely. I mean, Gino and his staff has really, you know, been wonderful to me. I've gone twice. I went by myself my first year during the NCAA tournament when we weren't playing. And I hope I never have that opportunity at that time of year again, but I figured I'm going to learn from people. And so I went 3 days to Connecticut, and I went 3 days to Notre Dame, and really had a great opportunity to learn and just to grow, and I really appreciate those staffs for embracing that opportunity for me. And then we went back the next year in October and spent, I think, two practices, two full days, and made it sort of our staff retreat and watched UConn practice. And so you know, I just think it's a no-brainer. I'm more grateful to those coaches that would let us in. I mean, it started when I started at UCLA as an assistant from 93 to 95. It started then. I gained so much. I would almost always stay after and watch the men practice. And in 95, they won the national championship. And I carpooled with Mark Gottfried and Lorenzo Roma. I told them I would babysit for free if they'd let me carpool with them. And, you know, Mark's a head coach now at NC State, and Lorenzo's a head coach at Washington. And then Steve Lavin, the other men's coach, he started bringing me over to Coach Wooden's house every other Tuesday. So it started so early in my career that I was so influenced by people that would mentor me or things I got to see and watch, people that would pass down their wisdom to me, that, man, the most foolish thing I could ever do is stop learning from great programs and great coaches. So it's been really fun for me to do it, but it really, to me, is a no-brainer.
Well, one thing that we all have been waiting for is teams that have been able to step up in the Pac-12 and challenge the supremacy of Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Cal was right there last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now with the improvement in Colorado and your program, and you know, Coach mm-hmm. Cooper taking over at USC, and
I think
Washington. Mm-hmm. This is getting to be one heck of a conference.
Well, the whole game has changed. When Larry Scott took over as the commissioner of the Pac-12, it all changed. The revenue from TV, the TV contracts, we have 106 women's basketball games on TV. That's almost double anywhere else. The game has changed, and what it's done is it's not only given us revenue streams into our schools, but it's given us the exposure to be able to keep the best talent here on the West. And we kept losing, I mean, so much talent to the East Coast year after year. And we needed to step up. We needed to step up and not only, you know, compete at a higher level, which obviously Cal did a great job of, and other people are starting to step up. But we also really needed just to recruit better. And we needed the tools to be able to sell that in young people's living rooms and to their families. And so the whole game has changed. And also we just have some great young coaches. You know, I'm on the younger end of being a head coach, but there's people way younger than me, and Linda Lappi and Lindsay Gottlieb that I just think are just doing a spectacular job, and I'm so excited for what's happening all around our conference. I just think the depth is so much better, and I've already seen some teams on TV and through video, and I said to my staff about a week ago is just that the Pac-12 is just at a totally different level. I mean, just watching Oregon State play, for instance, I mean, they are just so dramatically improved. And, you know, it's just, I think the Pac-12 networks and what Larry Scott has done, and Lydia, the president of the Pac-12 networks, it's changed the game. There's a vision for women's basketball that I think is in very few places and very few conferences, and myself at UCLA has been able to reap the benefits of that.
Now, Coach, when you read the tweets and stuff that you are always out there,
mm-hmm.
You're talking about, you talk about Pauley Pavilion, you talk about mm-hmm. the legacy of Coach Wooden, you know, and that's one of the things that I really wanted to mention and talk about here is, you know, UCLA does have that storied tradition both on the men's side and on the women's side with players like Ann Myers and You know, it's something that you seem to use well as both as a promotion tool, in addition, you know, something you clearly believe in. And, and now it seems that it's working and paying off for you on the recruiting trail.
Well, yes, I agree with you. I just think that, you know, I think in women's sports in general, I think we need to realize that a lot of people came before us to give us the opportunities that we have. You know, I had Melana Martin, who is one of the great players here at UCLA, at our game with her four kids, and just wrote me an email this morning about how her kids are looking up to our players and the way that we're doing things. And that just warms my heart. And I always think about that when alumni come to the games, is are we doing them proud, so to speak? And, you know, I think that's such a huge, important priority. And, you know, if Coach Wooden spent all this time with me, and I think about his family, you know, someone had to sacrifice for Coach Wooden to be able to mentor and impact so many people. His family shared Coach Wooden so amazingly graciously with people like me. And so I think, who would I be if I didn't honor that, if I didn't honor that tradition and the people that had come before me? I mean, Ann Myers has been one of my biggest supporters since I've taken this job. Denise Curry, the other person that's up in the rafters, and Jersey is retired. And but it's such a motivator. I mean, you know, when I recruited this class, there's a huge wall in our Hall of Fame, and there's 109 national championship trophies, and it's daunting and overwhelming, to say the least. And some people in the past have come because of the 109, but make no mistake about it. You know, we honor the past, and it teaches us so much. But the reality is, none of those trophies are women's basketball, not one of them. And so we have a job to do. So I tell the players that I'm recruiting, we need to honor the past. We need to play in such a way that that shows that we appreciate the past. But I'm not recruiting someone to be associated with the 109. I'm recruiting people who want to fill the empty space in the bottom right-hand corner of that trophy case. And so we've got some things to do. I walk our recruits around Pauley Pavilion. You walk down the hallway of our men's side. We have, you know, identical sides, but if you walk down the men's hallway, there's 11 national championship banners that hang right there, as well as the ones that are up in the rafters. And I just say to our recruits, not one of these is women's basketball. Every other sport that is played in Pauley Pavilion has won a national championship, minus women's basketball. Now, they did win an AIAW championship, and I don't want to take anything away from that. But since we've been in the NCAA, that's the truth. And so, you know, it's an interesting balance all the time. But I mean, I'm here. I'm able to recruit at this level because of the incredible sustained excellence of the past. So I want to embrace that. I want to learn from that. What made them successful? You know, when we started practice this year, Rafer Johnson, who sits right behind our bench, maybe the most decorated athlete of all time, lit the torch in the 84 Olympics. He came into our practice and he said, he taught our players how to put their socks and shoes on just like the way Coach Wooden did, and talked about what that meant and what went before them. And so we really honor that. And at the same time, we also understand that we have some really significant shoes to fill, and we have a job to do, and we absolutely have to step up and do it. And if we want to do things that have never been done before, we better practice in uncommon ways that have never been practiced that way before. So we just, you know, I mean, it's just an interesting balance. I mean, I really do. I feel so privileged and humbled to be able to walk in those shoes, and then I'm also so driven and determined to be able to have women's basketball be a contributor to that legacy.
Well, Coach, this is the first number one recruiting class in UCLA's history for women's basketball. The future is looking bright, but let's not look past this year for a few minutes first. I know a lot of people like to talk about the recruits, but
right,
take a second, please. And you know, this is a quality group of kids that could make some noise and definitely is looking at an NCAA tournament berth.
Well, I think, yeah, well, we're hosting the first two rounds. So, you know, it's a tremendous motivator right there to be playing at home in the NCAA tournament, without a doubt.
So take 1 second for our listeners, please, and tell us about the players that you have on your team and what makes them special.
Well, you know, I pride myself in development, and I hired incredible teachers on my staff. Shannon Perry and Tony Noonan and Jenny Huth are just spectacular teachers of the game. And I look at where players have come. You know, Thea Lemberger is, you know, running the point for us. And, you know, she was recruited and was sort of a hustler and just great defender. And you just loved her grit. And she did all of those things as a freshman. And then, you know, her sophomore year, she was got to be known as a shooter. And then her junior year, she, you know, got to be a little bit more of a playmaker and started to be a real vocal leader. And then this year, she's adding so much more and breaking people down off the dribble and her runner and her pull-up. And so, you know, it really starts with Thea. And she's the hardest worker in our program. And, you know, she's really become a really top point guard in the Western United States. And so that's been really fun to watch. She's really, her IQ is off the charts. Her determination and competitive spirit is it's just great. And then we've got a sixth-year senior in Antonia Yingafa. Talk about going through adversity and going through all the things that happen in college. She's been doing it for 6 years. And so, you know, I think that she anchors the other side of that. And her she has this competitive nature that, you know, really that's what happened yesterday. Her will was just so strong, and that will allowed other people to believe that had never gone through that before. And it was just give me the ball, we're going to find a way, and anchor it through me, and I will make it happen. So it really starts with Tonya Yingafa and Thea Lemberger. And then you got people like Nyra Fields, who are just they're really athletic, and they have spent an incredible offseason developing their game. Got some valuable experience last year, but this is a whole new level, a whole new role, and she's just growing every week. You know, we've had film session a couple weeks ago, and she's just started pulling out her phone and taking notes on everything we said, and then she reviews it with me before practice so that she can carry it over the next day. And it's just you know, my big thing is we want to do things in an uncommon way. I stole that from Tony Dungy, and we want to make. I want to have uncommon women choose to be at UCLA that are willing to make uncommon choices, and therefore, hopefully, yielding an uncommon result. And that's really been the theme of our year. I mean, you know, you talk about last night. You know, Madeline Brooks, who came to us as a walk-on, and you know, was not called upon until late in the second half, and then we only had five players left. Our other players, three players, had fouled out. And at the end of the game, her and Dominique Williams have played 0 minutes in the positions that they're playing. They haven't practiced it. They haven't played it. And they came in and did a huge, made huge contributions. Madeline Brooks gets this weak side rebound, controls it, and then knocks down two clutch free throws. And, you know, I think that's been the story of our year. We've got really good selfless pieces that probably if we played a series of one-on-one games versus other teams, we might not win a whole lot. But connect us together and, you know, bring our heart and our teachable spirit into the mix, and now we got a chance to make some noise. We can't do it by ourselves. I think we've proven it. We played that way against Nebraska. When adversity hit, we sort of went to our islands. But I think we've learned from that, and now I really like my team. You know, individually, on paper, we don't look like much. I've gotten so many letters today going, we went to support the team yesterday, but never thinking we could actually win, and look what your team showed. And that's really been the story of our year. On paper, we're not too much, but connect us and we can do anything.
Well, and you certainly put yourself in a position with a tough schedule this year, too. Nebraska,
that was bad,
Oklahoma,
bad coaching right there.
Mm-hmm. Still to come, Notre Dame and Minnesota before the Pac-12 mm-hmm. schedule. Yeah, that's quite an endeavor taking on that group.
Well, and, you know, this weekend, you know, we have James Madison, who just beat Virginia by 20. And, you know, I mean, just there's a lot of really good teams on our schedule just this weekend. And playing three games in 3 days with our lineup is just going to be another opportunity to grow in our mental toughness. But, you know, it's interesting. I always have said all along, and I've preached it, but sometimes I got to preach it to myself the most, is, you know, do you really want to be measured by any other way other than the nation's best? You know, like, don't you want to measure your progress by, you know, where you want to become and where you want to go? And so, you know, I think that's where we're at. I mean, you know, Nebraska, to open up the year at their place, opening their new arena, they exposed every bad habit or anything we didn't have. But what a great teaching tool. You know, I think the harder part for me as a coach that I need to keep remembering is just how, you know, I've just got to keep their confidence up and keep focusing on growth and improvement. I have not talked one time about goals or the end game or the destination. It's all about, I ask them the same question every day. Did you become a better teammate today, and did you improve on the court today? And if they did those two things, then I need to be happy and keep pouring into them and trust that the results will take care of themselves in the end. But it's a daunting schedule or an incredible incredibly exciting schedule, depending on how you look at it. But we want to be ready, and I think all those reference points when you're preparing for March are so valuable. You know, like my assistant told me today, Corey, we can't will that to them. We can't give it to them. They have to conquer a hard situation and earn that confidence, and we're just going to be a more confident team because they went and earned it. We didn't give it to them. We can't give it to them. They had to go earn it. And there's only one way to gain confidence, and that's to conquer hard things, and our schedule is definitely going to provide those opportunities.
Well, Coach, there is no question that, you know, you have definitely got this program and headed in the right direction. The energy and enthusiasm that you and your coaching staff bring, you know, is clearly something that is contagious, and actually, you know, the administration, there had been question marks about the administration's mm-hmm. interest in women's basketball in the past, and I think that you've energized, you know, the entire athletic department and program with what you've got going on. And that's no small task. So congratulations on everything that you've done thus far. And it's looking like it's getting even better and brighter as the time goes on.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank you. And I had my own questions. And like I said, the Pac-12 has really made things easier. But the reality was is that they took a risk on me too. And the administration, I was an unproven coach. I mean, I hadn't had the chance to prove myself yet, and they took a risk on me, and I took a risk on them, and I knew the past comments and those kinds of things, and I think hopefully I've stepped into who they hoped I would be, and I know they're stepping into who I've hoped them to become in terms of supporting and resourcing our program to have sustained excellence. So I think it was a mutual thing, and we're both stepping up, and it's really, really fun. But we need it. We need the West Coast teams to do it. I mean, not just for us, but for our game. I mean, you know that as just a great supporter of women's basketball. We need the Western United States to really bring that sustained excellence, to really support our women's programs. And our game needs it. And our game needs us to be competitive. We need it to have more parity. And so I'm just trying to do my part.
Absolutely right. The West Coast, definitely, you got to keep those girls at home. Even though I will say I do like having Kalina Mosqueda Lewis here and having
Kalina. I know you do. Who can blame you?
But, yeah, so. I can understand, and it would be great. You're absolutely right. I would sacrifice that for the growth of the game.
mm-hmm. Well, I think Connecticut, if they didn't have her, they could go find somebody else. Just a hunch, but I think they could. But you know what? If she's happy and she's having a great experience, that'll all even out in the rest. But we need to at least provide a very viable option. You know, we need to provide for those kids that say, hey, I always wanted to stay in California, but I just never thought I could and achieve my dreams. We just need to provide an option. It's not going to be for everybody. Just like I've stolen a couple kids from the Midwest and from the South, and it's not going to be the best fit for everybody. But we definitely need to provide viable options in the Western United States to play at the nation's highest levels.
So, what's more important, being ranked as you head into the tournament, or making sure you beat USA?
Well, that is a great question. No, definitely. I don't know if it's even being ranked, but I think it's playing your best basketball at the end of the season, or, you know, just in terms of like football this weekend. I don't know. I have a lot of talks about that with Jim Mora. It's like this fun thing that the rivalry between UCLA and USC is so fun. I mean, it's probably one of the top five rivalries in all of, you know, college sports. And at the same time, it has gotten so big that sometimes it absolutely overshadows the body of work of our student athletes and our teams. And so, we want to embrace it and have fun with it and, you know, let LA talk about UCLA and USC all week and whatever else, and at the same time realize that it's not the defining thing of our season. So I don't have that all figured out yet, so I'm trying to enjoy it and minimize it all at the same time.
Coach, good luck to you the rest of the way. I know it's going to be a lot of fun out on the Pac-12 this year, and there is no question that, you know, the way that you're going about doing things, I love the way that you have, as we talked about to start this, embraced the past and bringing it to the present and pushing towards the future.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your podcast and your show. Thank you for what you're doing for our game, and really it's an honor to be with you. So thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Coach.
Hi, I am Cynthia Cooper, newly named to the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame, and you're listening to Dishin' and Swishin'.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you back to Dishin' and Swishin' this week. We're looking at some traditional programs that are trying to get back to the levels where they had some incredible success in the past. Now, we talked to Coach Corey Close of UCLA, and now I'm pleased to welcome for the first time on the podcast a gentleman that is working hard at bringing George Washington University back to the top of the A-10 and into NCAA prominence, Jonathan Sippis, the former associate head coach at Notre Dame. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, David. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Coach, this is year two at GW, and, you know, congratulations. You've already won that important signature win, that early season victory over Kent.
Well, I think it was great to obviously get that win. It's really important, I think, that in the non-conference that we are playing teams that we know have made NCAA tournament runs, challenge our team and I think prepare us for, you know, in year two, especially after seeing how competitive the A-10 is, how many teams play in the postseason. We've got to be able to balance that, and we were fortunate enough to be involved right when I got the job in a negotiation for a home-and-home series with Cal, and it's just really important, I think, for our kids' confidence. We've played several teams that have been ranked, and I think the ability to compete and then ultimately at the end not just have a moral victory but be able to come out on top is huge for us going forward.
And, of course, you won your first tournament game last year in the A-10 postseason, which was important for George Washington as well. Now, this is a program that for years was at the very, very top of the A-10 in a regular and postseason play, but it hit upon some hard times in the last few years. Now, you obviously coming from such a successful program with such a storied history as the Irish at Notre Dame, the history of the program clearly meant something to you.
You know, absolutely. I think, it was my goal to become a head coach, and I think one of the things, if not the most important, one of the two most important things at GW was that sense of history and what Joe McEwen had built, for 20 years. And I think not only had he built it where it was an expectation that you would play for an A-10 championship, both regular season and tournament, but you would get to NCAA tournament games and you'd win them. And you'd get to that second weekend and be in a position, hopefully, to play in Sweet 16 games and Elite Eight games. And I think understanding that we see the banners in the Smith Center every single day. We talk about it. We bring our alums back and talk to our current players about it. And then even in something with the new team room and locker room we have, we try to put that around our players every single day so they can see what the past had provided and to really make that an inspiration. But you're absolutely right. It was a big part of when that position came open at GW that it was a challenge I really liked because I really think you can always build upon tradition.
You know, one of the things that is interesting to me, you know, we talk about the changes that have gone on in the conferences and teams coming and going, and it's unfortunate for the A-10 that Temple, who was so strong, left to move on to the AAC. But, you know, it's kind of nice to see, for you guys to have George Mason come in as a nice local rivalry to build.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, we've already, both schools, I think, have embraced that and have done some things involving all sports. You know, we call it the revolutionary rivalry. Even this fall, we've had a lot, a focus around those games, both at George Mason and at GW. And I think in women's basketball, you have the ability where you have two coaches to are within their first 2 years. It's exciting because when I was at Notre Dame, obviously the rivalry with Connecticut was so important. I think it was so good for women's basketball. And the same thing, David, I can tell you one of the questions when I told my two kids that we were going to be going to D.C. that I was asked is, who is going to be our UConn? So who is going to be that rivalry? And when a 5- and a 7-year-old are asking that, that's in their DNA, and it's been really good. We played George Mason last year in the non-conference. Our kids play against them, especially the DMV kids growing up in AAU and in high school. So it's fun to take that one step further.
And, of course, you have certainly taken on some challenges in your out-of-conference schedule. You know, you mentioned that the home and home was already in the works with Cal, but you know, playing Maryland, and now you're heading down this weekend to take on Georgia in their tournament. Are two more top 25 programs, and you know, playing pro teams like that has to help heading into conference play.
Absolutely, I think it was a philosophy that was very similar at Notre Dame with Coach McGraw and Cat, making sure in the non-conference that you're challenging yourself. And I think part of that is looking at a style that you're playing in the non-conference to help us get ready for the A-10. And you know what, I think when you get to the A-10, you hopefully in 13 non-conference games have seen as many different styles as possible, so you're not seeing something for the first time. And I think being able to go into hostile environments and playing somebody, you know, I think one of the things we knew going in to play Maryland was they were coming right off the UConn game, and I think I learned a little bit as a head coach in year two, and kind of looking at the schedule we kind of had inherited in year one, how to temper that a little bit, and maybe get a couple more games and start some series that had to start at the Smith Center. But you know, I was very gracious for Brenda Freeze for starting that series, and it hasn't just been us in the local area. She's playing home and home, you know, with Towson, and I think that's important that the kids locally get to see some of the best competition. And I think I was proud. It wasn't our best night at Maryland last Tuesday that our kids bounced back last night, but I think being able to go on the road, be able to play in a tournament situation like we are this weekend, starting with Georgia on Friday, hopefully it builds a couple things. It makes sure that we've seen a lot of things, but it also, I think, prepares us to go on the road and especially with our freshmen, have an idea of what it takes to have to do a lot of the little things to win in a conference play.
Coach, coming from a program like Notre Dame for 9 years, you know, where you were dealing with really the elite of the elite, how difficult has it been the adjustment to A, temper expectations, and B, set your sights on who to look for recruiting-wise that's more in the A-10 area, say, then should we say, the top of the ACC now, formerly the Big East?
You know, I think expectations, knowing going in, it was really important with Patrick Nero, our athletic director, and I think knowing it was all part of the process. And that was a hard part last year, I think, at one point. Is making sure that we knew it was a marathon. And in a situation where we went through some bumps at the end of the non-conference, the beginning of the A-10 last year, it was still making sure we understood how to put in day by day building that championship culture. And he has been phenomenal in that way, David. He understands this isn't something overnight. He likes to say there's only one Brad Stevens in the world. But I think that part, he's been really good. I think we've tried to look at it from a recruiting aspect. And I know that first weekend I went out, all of a sudden it was, I like these kids. And like you said, well, so did Notre Dame and UConn and Stanford and Duke and understanding the high academic kid. I think that part of it is finding kids who still understood, you know, a strong academic school with a basketball-rich tradition that wanted to be part of something that was going to be kind of a rebirth. And we've had to do it in a little different ways. You know, we signed three freshmen, two of them start. We have two transfers sitting out that are part of kind of our, impactful program of keeping local kids home. But you're absolutely right. It ends up being a different pool that you're looking at, and I think you've got to try to sit at the table sometimes with some of those people that are at a higher level than you right now, and work those battles. If you don't sit at that table, you can't be there in the end. And I think I've learned in recruiting, you get told no a lot more than you get told yes, and just to make sure that we don't dwell on losing a kid. We really want those kids that want to embrace that challenge of coming to GW right now and knowing that it can be done there. And Joe McEwen, I think, proved that while he was here, knowing that he can take kids and be at the top of the A-10 and be, you know, not just making an NCAA tournament. And I think From a recruiting standpoint, you know, my staff's done a really good job, and having, you know, three Notre Dame people on my staff, they understand, I think, that character kid we're looking for, and we're going to turn over every rock we can to try to find the right one.
When you see a team, a program like Delaware last year, or, you know, St. Bonaventure a couple years ago going Sweet 16 from the A-10, how much does that help you sell that sell your program to a high level kid and be able to tell them, hey, look, this is what one or two kids were able to do, and you can be that type of transcendent player?
Well, I think it's really important. I think it's really important anytime you know people are successful in the same way, you know, Kurt Miller was at Bowling Green. I think you try to couple it with a couple of things. You know, one that you look at and see. I've had that experience, you know, of playing in five, you know, and excuse me, in coaching in five Sweet 16s, with the understanding that this is what the GW tradition's been able to do. You know, and be in four Sweet 16s and be in an Elite Eight and then grasp, you know, like you said, the current landscape. And I think that part of things, you know, even when it comes to our league, you know, we talked about how important it was, obviously, for us to beat Cal, but it's really important for our league to have a win like UMass over Rutgers and show those other teams in the league. And I think that goes with then playing a really good schedule. You can't all of a sudden, you know, be in a picture of trying to get in that large bid if you're not going to challenge yourself with NCAA-type teams and during the regular season. And I definitely think we have an eye on that landscape, and it's ticked a lot of brains, and Jim Crowley has been great. Obviously, Jim Jaber, I've known him since my first year at Notre Dame, and how they've built things. And I think the important part that I know my athletic director keeps saying is none of that was built overnight. You know, and you look at Jim's first couple of years at Dayton, and he hung in and got the local kids, and, you know, and now they're a top 20 program. So we definitely look at it that way, and I think try to talk to, you know, possible recruits in a position where that they can come to a place that has done it before. And there's a lot of schools that might have that moniker of BCS next to them, where they've never, if they've made an NCAA tournament, they haven't succeeded there, or they may not even have made one. And trying to get kids, I think, to make that choice, do they want to go in? And I think a lot of the kids that we've tried to recruit have succeeded. You know, between our three freshmen, they won seven state championships. And that understanding of you want to continue to play for something at the end of the year, and that mentality of being a champion every single day is something that we really try to focus on.
Well, there's no question. You mentioned Dayton, of course, and Gonzaga, of course, being another one. That Marist, there's plenty of examples of teams that are certainly raising the bar for mid-major status. Now, you mentioned the freshmen, and we talked about the transfers coming in, but, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about some other members on this year's team. And we might as well start right at the top of the scoring charts with Megan Knipe, who has just been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, you know, and Megan Knipe and Danny Jackson, you know, were two people that I think right away from day one wanted to know what they could do every single day to make our team better. And we talked a lot about kind of, you know, some of the things individually. And both of them had lost a year of eligibility before I had gotten there. And I think, you know, Meg is, I think there was a big part of knowing that I had worked with all those wing players at Notre Dame, you know, starting with Jackie Batiste and then having people like Sherelle Allen and Natalie Novosel and obviously Kayla McBride, is that understanding of how to build confidence and the trust I would have. And really, that started from day one, but really at the end of last season and seeing the progress we had made, I didn't think there was any question that those two would want to come back, but they had to want to come back. I wasn't going to sit there and then just tell them, you know, okay, you know, I think it'd be a good idea if you think about it. Like, they had to come to me, and they had to come to me and accept that challenge academically, too. It wasn't a matter of they both graduated in May. I wanted them to push themselves and get a meaningful master's. And I think Meg Knight made a very similar progression that Sherelle Allen made her junior year at Notre Dame. As we told her and told her and told her, for us to be successful, she had to shoot more. And she needed to hear it from her teammates. And we had a talk, and she's looked at me maybe twice all year in games. And when she's taken a shot that hasn't gone in, and I mean, it's simple. I just say, keep shooting. But she has diversified her game, and she can shoot the three. She can put it on the ground. She's understand the change in officiating, that she's gotten to the free throw line a little bit more. And I think the best part is there's 13 players that expect it when they, you know, expect her to shoot the basketball and are vocal about that. They get on her when she doesn't. So, what a phenomenal game she had against Cal. You know, I think now she's starting to get more and more attention, from Maryland and South Carolina State last night. But I think, she's somebody that's got a quick release, and I think it's been fun to see that confidence build, knowing that we need her to not just make shots, but to take them, and take them from various spots in the offense and really be able to attack a lot. And that's fun. And I think when you have somebody that you've been through a lot with, and Danny Jackson, is always trying to find her from the point guard spot. You know, Danny was 3 points away from 1,000 last night, and she, you know, she hit a three, you know, 2 minutes into the game. But she was the beneficiary last night, and kind of the defense really over pursuing on Meg and sending two people at her, that Danny got some open looks, and we're hoping that'll continue, that we'll have other people be able to step up when people are going to try to lean a little bit heavier defensively on Meg.
Well, there's no question that when you're trying to build a program to have, you know, a senior post, a senior wing, I'm sorry, not even senior, grad student post, grad student point guard, and grad student wing, certainly makes the instructing a little bit easier.
It is. And, you know, the fun part is, I think, the expectation. And, you know, we met, after the Maryland game, and Danny, Meg, and I, and just talked about what going forward and not letting things linger, and making sure we went right back to work, and so important would be just even the mental mindset, you know, because a couple of our freshmen hadn't lost games in a while, and they were great at taking those kids in along with Brooke Wilson, and getting our kids in the gym and getting them extra shots, and making sure everybody was in watching film. And so when we stepped on the floor that next time, last Thursday, it was really a focus group. And I laugh sometimes because I start two freshmen, but then I think the other three that start have a combined like 27 years of college experience between the three of them. So two fifth years and a sixth year. I don't know how many people have 16 years of academics out on the floor at any one time with two freshmen.
I think you could probably suit Duffy up and she'd fit right in and nobody would notice.
I'd like to. I'd like to. I think they'd all like that. They've seen her enough in practice to know how much she could help us.
Well, Coach, it's going to be an interesting Atlantic 10 season. There's no question about it. With Dayton being as strong as they are, and excuse me, and of course St. Joe's is also always tough. Duquesne has been a strong team as well, and you know, UMass already having taken Rutgers out in a game. So there's no shortage of talent in the conference.
Yeah, and it'll be very interesting because, you know, last year with the realignment, you know, we played nobody twice. And this year it really, I think, impacts. And I don't know if it's a sign of the league feels like we've made progress, but, you know, we played St. Joe's twice. We played Dayton twice. Obviously, the natural rivalry has had a Nathan twice makes a lot of sense. And now we play UMass twice. But, you know, it gives our kids another idea, too, because now there's some teams, courts we haven't been on yet, like St. Bonaventure, and Jim's got them off to a great start. And to head down to Richmond, and, you know, Michael's obviously got a signature win in beating Miami of Florida at their place, so... you know, it's exciting because I think you have new coaches in the league, like Marlene and I are in year two, and, you know, and you have Nyla, George Mason, who's you know, obviously brought her, you know, won a national championship at the Division II level. You know, every night you're going to be in for a battle, and I think the most important thing is making sure our kids are confident and well-prepared and don't take anybody lightly, because I think we've seen, you know, we lost up at UMass last year, and when I don't think we were in the best mind frame, and that falls right back on me. That was a good learning experience for me that we need to be able to be absolutely prepared to take everybody and anybody on. And I think beating Cal helps that mindset. There's nobody in the league we can't compete with.
Coach, one last question I got to ask you. Notre Dame and Connecticut, do we got to get this rivalry going again and start them playing again? I just think this year not having them playing each other really is bumming me out.
I think it'll happen. I mean, I think that the game needs it, and I think that's one thing that I think, you know, both head coaches of those programs understand that really, really well and how good for the game it is. You know, I think Muffet has a sense, too, I can remember David still getting the phone call when Baylor called and wanted to play in a home-and-home and thought I knew what the answer was going to be. And Muffet said it'd be really good. It'd be really good for us to be down there. It'd be really good to bring Baylor up here. It ended up being a three-game series because we ended up playing in the championship game of the preseason WNIT. I don't see any reason why that won't get done, and I would think the sooner. I think it'll be in that, you know, 14-15 season and be continuous, and I think hopefully then now it'll be a highlight of the non-conference season.
Sounds good. Coach, good luck the rest of the way. Looking forward to seeing the success and seeing George Washington back where it belongs in postseason play.
David, thank you so much, and enjoy your family over this Thanksgiving weekend, and we look forward to getting down to Georgia and getting out of this weather and lacing them up and taking on Coach Landers' Bulldogs.
Sounds good. Have a great holiday, and I'm looking forward to the reports of the kid games this winter.
Absolutely. Fireballs. My daughter missed our game last night, so do a fireballs practice.
All right. Good to see she's got the dedication.
She does. They're already, I think, on practice four. She was kind of bummed they don't, because we're going to be traveling tomorrow. They don't have practice. They can't be at practice tomorrow night. So we'll have her in the gym. Don't worry.
Take care, Coach.
All right. Thanks.